Podcast, the live pleasure podcast where me and my boyfriend's other girlfriend help you with deepening your intimacy.
And understanding alternative relationship structures and styles. Yeah. I'm Fifi, she, they, bisexual, polyamorous, greedy.
And I'm Gabby, she, they. I'm a cheater, obviously, because I'm bisexual and polyamorous, right?
No, we're just two femmes, also friends who have the same boyfriend. His name is Bear. And yeah, we're not dating. Yes. We're just metamors.
We are just really good friends. And you are watching the fourth episode now of Metamore Chats titled How to Be a Good Metamore.
Mm-hmm. This is what we're all here for, the metamore relationship. So we're here to answer some questions. Pretty hyped about those. And we got you. We're going through it. I don't think we're going to be able to cover this topic in its entirety, but we'll do our best.
Yeah. We actually got truly a bunch of questions from the audience, and we're excited to jump into them today. And kind of like finally give you guys the answers you've been waiting for since Metamore Chats was announced.
Yeah, and we're not here forever, so this is a 8-week season. This is our first season. Yeah,
our first season. Yes.
If you're not here right now on this live with us today, you can find all replays on YouTube on this channel, also metamoreculture.com, where there are amazing resources, show notes, and our amazing merch line, which is a similar shade of pink, my favorite hoodie, but it's not this one, but they're mad cute.
You can catch replays. We're on all of the major podcast networks. And I mean, we were mostly focused on YouTube, but I've been really pleased to see how many of you are engaging with us on audio podcast platforms. Shout out to Apple Podcasts, where people really love us. Thank you.
No, for real. Yeah, this is definitely an adventure and an experiment for us. I'm a relationship coach. I coach with Bear, and Gabby is a software engineer. And so we've come together.
And a marketing professional, you know, a marketing manager. There we go. I have many hats, but I'm the big social media person, and I'm always like, can we do a reels? And they're like, we're coaching actual clients right now. What are you talking about?
No, like, I really need to bring Gabby on as our marketing director. Like, the visions are there, and I'm so grateful that we joined forces and started this podcast for y'all, because it's so rich, and the feedback has been so encouraging. So thank you all for supporting and listening. And we talked last week about kink and negotiations. That was fun. I had a really good time talking about IBS and modeling that for people. Do you are you feeling called to jump into question asking? How to be a good metamore?
How to be a good Well, let's intro the topic first. You know, like, how do you think you have to be a good metamore?
How to be a good metamore? There's no like one straight answer. That's the thing. Like, that's what I really feel is going to come out of looking through some of these questions, is that I'm probably going to wish I had more context because context matters.
Always. Always.
So like that's the thing about the metamore relationship. It's not a one size fits all. It just isn't. Like, simply is not. You know,
I mean, in general, relationship advice is it can't be one size fits all. So the idea that the metamore relationship can just fit into a simple template is like, what relationship do you know does that?
A lot of people want that. That's what's so challenging about. That's why I'll never be out of a job, and the metamore relationship will never stop being super complicated, because it's one of the most out there, I would say, of the intimacies. Like, it's so hard for us to even conceive of our partner taking pleasure from someone outside of us that like, compersion feels, yo, if society could get to compersion, I might.
Well, you know, and not that compersion is, like, necessary. But more so, like, that you have an openness to compersion at the very least, and that a commitment to managing your emotions in a way that, like, allows your partner to enjoy things would be a good starting point for me.
It sounds so simple. I think that's the thing.
For me, I mean, I used to be like so anxious all the time about the role of being a metamour because I had had so many tumultuous non-monogamous relationships. So like I just went in like, oh my God, we're gonna hate each other potentially, or it's gonna turn out like weird or awkward or distant. And you know what? Just when I came in thinking that, like certainly you and my other metamour have truly proved me wrong. Neither of you is what I expected, but you're what I got in a really great way. Thank you for having great taste in partners.
I don't know. Maybe it was like a rite of passage thing. I think we all, I don't know anyone who hasn't undergone some versions of learning as you go with this kind of dating, relating, engaging, intimacy, romance. Like if you're doing it in a way where there is no pre-recorded template or way to follow, if you're saying, you know what? No, we're going to check in as we go along the whole way through. And that means that I might try something that I won't know I don't like until I try it.
Exactly. And you know, being empathetic through that period, like I might come up against things that are triggering or that I didn't know I didn't like until it happened. But like looking at the context of the situation and understanding that everyone's moving with care, but which can only happen if everyone is moving with care.
Yo, start watching Couple to Throuple.
Oh
They are
my
doing
God, let's talk about it.
it
No, let's talk about it before we get to questions. I have to talk about it. I it's driving me bananas. So I like you know, spoke to a lot of members of the cast because I and I'm so grateful because I definitely got a more holistic idea of like what everyone's intentions are going in, but I just still feel like the impact on the couple on the solos is
On
bananas.
the singles, my God. Someone used the word
It
dehumanizing, and I agree.
I agree. And then they just felt so shut down, right? As a result of that, if I ever heard the feedback from someone that I had, they felt dehumanized because of something that I did, that's just such a severe feeling for someone. And it's probably really intense in their experience that I feel like I would immediately be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. What were the actions that I did? Like, help me understand. And I would immediately jump into a place of curiosity, but there was not that happening, and it just like broke my heart so entirely, so much, so bad.
Jeez Louise. Yo, I was seeing that. I was like, I feel so bad for all of them, first of all. And having recorded a reality TV pilot, like I understand the pressure that having the cameras right there and like you don't know what version of you they're painting and you're able
And
to
there's not
communicate
a lot of
directly to them.
autonomy.
Exactly. There really isn't. And so like unless you're getting more information from the back and directly from the people is not looking good. Isn't these people's characters is looking a little, not a little, very, very judgmental, just inconsiderate. I mean, the structure of the entire show is couples privilege, is point blank, couples privilege is the center be all
Of the
of the
show.
show. Yes. And the treatment, and it's kind of like a test to see if the couple can awaken to that, to couples privilege.
I feel so bad because at the same time, like the host and the sexologist who's on the show, I feel like are clearly trying their best. Clearly.
One thing
Like,
that was pointed out
how can
was how come
you?
the only the couples are getting support, that counseling support.
I
That's
agree. As soon as that was said, I agreed with it. I was like, you're right. Why is that
Are you
happening?
kidding? The couples are being dehumanized in that process. They are being treated like extras in and used and just disposed of, and they feel
Yeah,
that.
and just kind of
And
discard,
they have no one is holding them through that process. I just feel so bad for them.
What I was saying would be like an alternative in my brain is like, I think of like, Are You the One, right? Where you go on a date with like a person every week and it's like more randomized. I feel like if the solos were taking them individually out on a date instead of them just getting to select, like that process feels odd because at the end of the day, they are newbies to non-monogamy. So like the only thing they can make at that point is an aesthetic choice.
Precisely. This is all, I don't know. I mean, I'm mad about it, but I also understand how this is a stepping stone to introducing non-monogamy into the mainstream. And this is how folks are able to conceive of it digestible to the masses. And it's just giving hard, kind of traditional swinger-esque, which makes sense because in our world, we
Yes.
know that the swinger, for folks who are like just dipping their toes, like barely curious, and typically have already ridden the traditional relationship escalator with somebody, are now like, that's the pipeline. It's actually the usually swingers. If you're a partner, like that'll start that process of opening up. And then in that, because the swinger typical exchange is very couple centered and coupled privileged, you'll walk around spaces and people refer to themselves. They use the we to describe. Like that is one of the distinctions that I always note that like is kind of jarring when I enter swinger spaces is how they use the we to describe one per like to speak for two people, like a desire. We want this. Like I don't, that's hard for me. I wish people spoke for themselves.
Like, and this is something that you and Bear say all the time, which is that at the very least, like, set up what the guidelines for that, like, experience are, right? I'm going into a swinger space and there's not like an understanding of, that it will be that. I mean, obviously we learned that for ourselves, but I think just being more clear about like the distinctions, because I think people are leading with fear more. They're like, we're so different, rather than just being like, let me bridge the gap of our difference through like an explanation.
Yep, no, getting on the same page is hard.
All of that is to say, like, if swinging is what you want to do, I love that, but like, say that. So on the show, it's coupled to throuple. They're talking about polyamory, but those are people who are honestly they're pursuing open relationships. And maybe some of them might one day be pursuing polyamory, but they're not there yet. So why are we encouraging? I just there was like the clip of like Jonathan sleeping and the two of them just fighting like next to him. I was like, first of all, been there, and it's not fun. You're like, I can't go to sleep with them fighting. You're just pretending to sleep in the corner, and you're like, I just want
So,
to go home.
wait, oh my gosh, even in that
Damn.
position, that sounds terrible. Yeah, with a couple, yeah, I
Yes.
think a lot of us
I
have
have
with the
been. It
third
was like,
fighting couple.
yeah, they were always fighting, and then it was like it was a little bit more of a polycule than a couple, but it is the couple that I took all of my trauma from and projected it onto you and Bear. My bad. And one was like white, and the white one got drunk, goes on this like rant about Bob Marley and how she like cries about how racist people were to Bob Marley, just Bob Marley, I guess. And I just wanted to. I was like, "Fuck! It's in the middle of the night. I can't get out of here." Like, I miscalculated where I was at. The guy was like, he was toxic masculinity, and he was really transphobic. We were literally arguing all the time about transphobia, but I didn't know enough. I was just like, "You're wrong."
There you go. And you know what?
And he just was very
Before
manipulative.
we go into
It
answering these
was bad.
questions, I think we need to also hold that in mind that, like, I don't know what the belief structures are, of these people are because a lot of this is contingent upon, like, all the players involved. So I think that's what's most complicated about metamorph relationships and, like, couple to throuple is that, like, we're assuming that decisions only have to be made between two people in a relationship. And so that's the difference, is that when it's not a binary situation, you have to have the habit of knowing to check in with people. But again, some people not ha don't have that framework of being considerate, like, and just noticing, hey, maybe Gabby is uncomfortable in this situation. Like, maybe there were substances involved.
What I think it is.
Were people drunk?
We're drinking a little bit. When you're so in that we always speak for we, and then you are in like these dynamics with solos, right? There's in this situation with that couple and three solo people that they were like seeing. But whenever I had my grievance at that point being his like transphobia and toxic masculinity, now the partner, the woman, is like part of the like rehabilitation conversation. And it's like, well, we just feel like, even though that's not how she feels, she's just like trying to bridge the gap between us two. Suddenly it's we, and she's doing the emotional labor of translating what he means. But what he means
also she shouldn't be doing that work with him. That's the problem, is that like we still think that we need to speak for people, and people need to speak for themselves.
Yes. I think I'm incredibly triggered when the emotional labor that goes into a relationship gets offloaded onto the femme. When it's like, oh, so we will never have a conflict. Like, me and her will just conflict about it on your behalf. That's not how human conflict works.
And that tends to happen, especially if you're dealing with cis men, because they are actually so conflict averse in intimacy, like specifically, like my experience with them is that it's very hard to compute how you can simultaneously be in a loving, caring, intimate, deep relationship with someone and also have conflict, disagreements, things, disparities, reasons that you're not going to get along, and things that you won't see eye to eye on. Like, it's almost, they're not in full pleasure mode. Like, this is good, this is making me feel good. It's like the eject button is so fast for them. They're like someone else, because it tends to be because they're like in prioritized positionally, like their comfort is prioritized. So usually if they want it, they get it. So it's like a thing where I'm not even going to question what I need to do to have my comfort, because I'm entitled to that. Like, if you're not challenging that, you're not stepping in.
Yep.
To actually face the fear and speak for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. The like couple over everything mindset is so hard to like witness, right? Because you're just like, oh, so what you're saying is that not only is it two against one, but like if any of you is uncomfortable, I'm about to get hurt. And it's like, it's incredibly difficult to be like emotionally safe in that context. I love that context for like a little friendship. It's normalized in society for the couple to be over a friendship. So it's like, I don't take it as personal. But it's not so great when you're like, oh, we can get emotionally involved. And then later you're like emotionally involved, but you still will not share power with me.
No, that's the sounds low committal to me. I'm just going to get it wet for a second and head on out. Like, you know, if that's the vibe, like I'm all about contained consensual pleasure. But, you know, if we're actually trying to care, pretend like we don't have to pretend like we care about each other. OK, that's the other thing. Like, you don't have to like your mother more. You don't actually like, you can have consensual pleasure with people and keep it moving. If you're trying to cultivate emotional safe, like that's something else. I think our culture like has a really hard time distinguishing between those two. Like, we don't know how to just have sex and like be respectful and kind and direct and like not make it now this love bomby end all be all thing just because we fucked. Like, when can we just approach each other like in a human to human way instead of this escalate, like the escalator is, we need to cleanse ourselves of it, please.
Which just means you still have to be nice. It's not saying like don't do aftercare or something, right? It's like, do aftercare, check in, follow up after, and like slowly ease out of the experience if that's something that you need. I feel like swingers do that with me a lot, where like after we leave they like slowly taper off, and I appreciate that. Like, if that's like the aftercare that you need, like that's nice. I'll be there for that, because that's what you need, right? It's not that serious. Like, we don't have to ride the escalator, we don't. And it took me a long time to learn that. Like, don't get me wrong, I was purity culture mommy. Like, I was in the white dress promising my virginity to a husband who is nowhere to be found at age 31.
It's very understandable that.
And I like it that way.
It's like, definitely. Yeah, it's in there. We're going to have to look at it on a constant, consistent basis. The escalator will keep coming up. And if you are trying to divorce yourself from it, I think the haste, the energy behind it is usually like you're. A good sign that you might be riding on the escalators if things are feeling urgent. Like, you need to manage someone's feelings about the direction that the relationship is going in instead of checking in with yourself.
Yeah.
And knowing where you want to be at first. But
That's so embedded in like monogamy culture though. The like, I'm gonna pressure him. I'm gonna be like, oh, I want my ring. And like, when is it happening? It's like a fun game that they play. And I'm like, okay, like I get it. Like we like everybody loves a little role play, a little fake being annoying. But it's also like, are you actually creating such a severe sense of urgency? Like, and I know in monogamy that that's what they want to do.
We're not about that here. Sorry. Sorry.
When I first was like, I want to be polyamorous, I made a whole vision board for my year. And number one on it, write a book. Would you believe that's the year I wrote my book? And then I said, number two, I want to be good at polyamory. And now I'm like, I think what I meant by that is like, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to achieve compersion immediately, even though I was still figuring stuff out. And like, compersion is like came a lot later, to be honest. Like, why was I so focused on that out the gate? And number two, a lot of the pressure that I was receiving externally from friends or family, I was just listening to it too much. And also, I have ADHD, so if someone says something enough to me, I'm like, that's my own thought. So yeah,
I feel that.
I was like, oh, everyone's saying that I gotta do this, and everyone's all migrating towards this, so I have to too, or there's something wrong with me. And then my first few years of polyamory, really, when I look back, I was processing like me letting go of that, like me not feeling like, oh my God, I'm being judged because I'm not on that path, and me letting go of everyone else's pressure because it's their responsibility.
Yeah, the way to navigate it with external pressure. I mean, that's kind of step number one, I would say, is like coming into ourselves in the process. And there's, I think, also like when you make these decisions, having grace around when that, how that learning curve even came to be, because there's still a bravery in going out there and pushing your own boundary. And it sounds like really that was a part of the whole process so that you can get to where you are and understanding like where that all came from, but not letting it dictate the decisions that you make. It's not easy, and I think that's why there are so many questions about it. And you know, I'm scanning the ones that you sent me, and there's the external application of things, like there's influence, there's conditioning, there's culture, there's et cetera, there's like everything we are made up of when we're starting this process. And then there's like that context, that baggage, and then now we're like in it, practicing it, trying on non-monogamy, and all those things are influencing how we think we should be navigating this thing that really most of us don't have a template for. And again, it's never a one size fits all. So, you know, like I saw one about messing up in a first E&M relationships, tips to repair trust after a not so ethical one. Like you having had not so ideal, was there a trust rebuilding process that you went through?
I had to rebuild trust in my relationship. And you know, it's difficult because what in monogamy, it's very like one mistake, you're out kind of mentality.
It's like the approach has to be completely different. Yeah, to rebuild trust in a non-monogamous dynamic, I would say, like, first and foremost, requires everyone kind of being on board. Otherwise, you may need to grieve and process and have like a healing journey of your own independently. I think like if folks don't have a familiarity with accountability and how to go about that, it can be challenging to initiate a repair process. So that is my answer is like first, make sure everyone's on the same page about an initiating a repair process, and those that need to take accountability are wanting to. And then the trust comes after building enough reference to people not hurting each other anymore and building a new foundation that is different from the one that was causing issues before. Like nothing. You know, there isn't going to be trust if nothing changes. Like the structure, like whatever has to change for the trust to be built. So you may have to do, you may be able to do that with the group, or you might have to do that alone.
Yeah, my first kitchen table polyamory birthday. So beautiful and so fun and such a great experience. But also, like, because there was a lack of clarity about the boundaries, you know, we got into a little bit of conflict, me and my partner. I had so many people that I was, you know, interested in or currently dating, present all in one room and getting along, and it was really great. And I had like my metamor and my childhood friends, but then my meta and my partner snuck away for some intimacy at a play party environment where that is already the context we're walking in. Like, it's no big deal. But I remember at that time feeling so like betrayed because that just wasn't in our agreements, and it was my birthday and it was supposed to be about me. I think I obviously, having gone through that, I feel a lot more confident about my ability to get through something like that, right? But at the time, I was like, oh no, what if I'm bad at polyamory? What if I'm just not made for this type of relationship dynamic? And that's why I'm freaking out.
You wouldn't have known until it happened. And so you rebuilt trust by having a conversation and making new commitments afterwards. And that's because both of you came to the table, yeah, and there was able to be an acknowledgement that, yeah, that was a boundary crossing. Like, you can't really come to defensiveness to rebuild trust. That kind of fucks up the equation. It doesn't really add up if there is too much defensiveness. Yeah. It's okay if something is hard to digest, exactly, but you have to be able to take it and change. We have more questions. I don't know which one you want to jump to next. Oh.
Another one is, how do I give my boyfriend with abandonment trauma reassurance when he doesn't know how to vocalize his needs?
Well, I would say we've been talking about vocalization here, and I think just in reading this question, I think a lot of folks get really triggered or just activated when witnessing their partners in trigger activation. And so, unfortunately, I don't know if there's a solution to it, anything you directly can do that can solve whatever is fully coming up for him. If it has to do with him vocalizing his needs, that's definitely something that can only come from him. And so, as far as, you know, you can offer him all the reassurance in the world, and I honestly would suggest incorporating a practice where you consistently check in with each other. So this is our bread and butter of a lot of what we suggest to couples, is integrate a check-in, a regular emotional check-in, so that those of us who are having issues or trouble vocalizing, we have a contained space to do so. So this is an intentional check-in where you share affirmation and gratitude for each other. And then you also create space. So like you create emotional safety with affirmation, and then you step into challenges and you share what's coming up for you. So like, if you create a consistent container for offering him a space to check in and vocalize his needs, that's something you could do. But unfortunately, I don't know of a case where reassurance from a partner to a partner with trauma or trigger or activation, honestly, I've actually heard that that is one of the least effective things when someone isn't a response.
Yeah. My partner has OCD, so no degree of reassurance will ever satisfy OCD, right? And at first, when I didn't really have an understanding of how OCD played out in relationships, all the generic non-monogamy advice would just be like, well, you should be giving your partner reassurance. I was like, if I give any more reassurance, I'm going to be a reassurance robot. I just always want to solve my partner's problems. Like, when my partner comes to me with a problem, I just want to jump into action and fix it and be the person who saves the day. But the problem is that, like, I don't think I was giving my partner the room to develop, like, a self-soothing practice.
Actually, reassurance can sometimes come off condescending and just not listening enough to a person. So stop yourself before you offer reassurance and ask, where is this? Why do I want to offer this? What is making me feel like I need to offer this right now? Am I trying to change my partner's feelings about this? And if so, reminder, it's probably not yeah. gonna, you're not gonna be able to change.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
So have exactly. a protocol.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I just want to change it.
No, it's like it really exactly. is about building, co-creating these a protocol, because it changes. It's changed between Bear and I over the years. It's had like because we've changed. We just have changed, and so our activations and triggers yeah. like, will shift. And
yeah,
new ones will come and old ones will go, etc. And just protocols around how to respond in the case where one of us is feeling any type of way instead of, and so that.
Yeah,
will help with a lot of conflicts. Like just ending conflict cycles a little early is if we stop trying to change the way our partners are feeling about something.
That was my work for sure. I was waking up every day like I'm a fixer.
No,
and it really that wasn't the work. The work was just loving her, just like being there and loving my partner and showing up for my partner.
That's a work that a lot of people don't want to do, and that's okay if you're not trying to build a committed and deep relationship with someone. However, let it be known if you're not available for that so that you're not hurting nobody's feelings.
Let's see. So we have any advice for feeling less insecure when a man were super hesitant to be IRL? I received this like the first week we did this, which is why it's so funny, because we were sharing the story of how we met and I was like very hesitant to meet you. I think the answer to this question is that it probably has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. You can't make someone want to meet up with you. I'm sorry, babe.
It's unfortunate that as much as you might want to, yeah, just kind of hold out. I think this is also a good plug for metamors not always having to be friends. And the insecurity yeah. that might be coming up, you know, I don't know what it might be around. It could it be that like, oh, this metamor is hesitant and that's unlike other dynamics that you've experienced. And so you feel like you should have a reason to feel insecure just because the metamor is feeling hesitant. And so I think that has to do with being in the limbo of unknowing, like, we don't know what's going to become of your metamor and your partner's relationship. We don't know if the metamor is ever going to want to meet you. And you, as the partner, depending on the dynamic that you have, are just, your role is really just to support your partner. So it's going to be uncomfortable. You might realize that that dynamic does not work for you and you need a partner who dates people who want to meet you right away. You could co-create that with your partner if that's the standard you want to set. And there is a lot to learn from just sitting it out. I think that's a great practice.
Yeah. Yeah.